Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. You're listening to Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you tuning into us and being willing to get informed about issues and ideas that will transform our planet and hopefully save our planet. As most of you know, we are being assaulted. I hope you enjoyed Friday's rerun of Don Chapman's interview. I was able to escape to the Cascadia National Park and go camping where there was no internet, nothing there. It was really great to be unplugged for a few days. So thank you for that. I hope you enjoyed the rerun of Don on Friday. Today is Monday, and it's usually the day I interview activists from St. Louis, and I'm very excited to have back Scotty with Scotty's Contract out of St. Louis. He is really a contractor who has come up with a brilliant idea of a phytoremediation. So, Scott, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your time here.
Thank you, Lonnie, and everybody at UCY-TV for having me on again. I look forward to this, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time since we talked last.
Oh, good, 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 because you've been putting a lot of things in order. Why don't you give our listeners kind of the general rundown of what your process is, because Scotty's come up with an idea of, and he's actually working with the EPA and following guidelines to help remediate the soil at the Westlake landfill and frankly, any nucleated area or poisoned area. So why don't you explain to them how your process works?
Our process works by incorporating electrokinetics, which is sending low-level electric current through the soil to get the heavy metal soil toxins moving and directed to an area where plants suck these toxins out of the ground and into the plant. After the plant absorbs these toxins, they then go into a digester with some proprietary stuff, but the end result is we have heavy metal toxins that are not toxic to humans in a matter of days.
Wow. Wow. And then what happens with the plants after that?
They go into the it depends. In the pilot study, we have plans coming up. The plant material may be able to be reused. That's a hope, but that will be determined by what the radiation levels or what, it's just that's to be determined. That's
right,
just what
depending
I heard.
On what you find. So tell us a little bit about your study, your plan that you're going to do, that you're going to conduct. What does that entail?
I'm going to try for another grant, DEP, or through the federal government, that pertains to what we're going to be studying and the science behind the everything.
Mm-hmm. And how long will it be conducted for, the study?
It's suggested by the rules and regulations that govern the phytoremediation that 1 to 3 year studies are suggested.
Okay. So are you going to study it for 1 year and then continue, or are you going to just plan on doing a 3 year study?
Well, I'm planning on a 3 year study off of that with quarterly and yearly reporting and updates and progress.
Uh-huh. And so what does the study entail? Like, are you going to use people's houses and their yards? Or are you going to just go out to a section of the landfill? Or what does it actually entail when you say you're going to conduct a three-year study? What can you give us a synopsis of what would happen to whatever area, or how you're going to determine the area? What's going to happen?
There's a few options, but basically we would construct a greenhouse and then set up an electrical field in the yard, and this is geared for to help people in their yards remove the toxins out of their yards. They probably are not going to let me work on the landfill and help there. So I've redirected my efforts to actually helping the people remove the toxins from the yard, which I fear are going to be ignored by the their existing rules and guidelines or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So you'll get one neighbor, two neighbors, three neighbors near there to participate, or how many people would participate with the program?
I'm hoping up to 4 or 5.
Okay.
It depends on how big people's yards are.
Okay. So you put a greenhouse in between these yards, essentially? Like in their backyards, where the backyards
kind of
conjoin?
Right. A lot of places, they have backyards border each other, side yards border each other, you know, just to keep the cost as low as we can. We need to, use the least amount of greenhouses as we can,
mm-hmm.
to keep the overall cost for the homeowners.
So what's the point of having the greenhouse? What's the point of the greenhouse?
The greenhouse allows for plants to be grown all year long, and it also, we could incorporate plants that may not be conducive to this growing area.
Okay.
We can grow like there's a radish, for example, that's has big phyto abilities. It would be a good winter season crop to grow.
Okay.
Where canaf would be a spring summer season plant to grow.
Oh, I see. So you'll grow different types of plants according to how they grow in that temperature like radishes. So you're saying that radishes actually absorb radiation? Is that
the type of radish that I'm thinking of? Yes, it will.
Wow. You grow it in the greenhouse. Now, when you're growing this in the greenhouse, does it make that inside structure of the greenhouse more radiated since it's attracting the radiation to it with the electromagnetic?
I would have to assume yes.
Huh.
And that's the other reason for the greenhouse is we are containing and confining the radiation that may be present.
Mm. So that would be coming up through the air and the soil. And then once those things, so through the season, now there's a lot of questions I have about this. I hope you don't mind me keep bombarding
it's
you with
fine.
Questions.
No, this is fine. This is fine.
Once the greenhouse is built, the plants are growing. Who may you guys will your firm or your organization will maintain the greenhouses, like the growth, the watering, the tending, because all that stuff needs to be tending, right? So it has to be tended. So
yes. I there besides having like a camera system monitoring, there's other options. Just out of curiosity's sake, I'm gonna want to look at them once a week.
Okay.
It's not something that, and also after the pilot study, our goal is to teach other people how to do this. The pilot study is for us to streamline our system. We're combining 5 other proven ways to remediate into one system.
Mm. Wow. Has this ever been tried before? Has anybody ever done this before successfully?
Each one of the systems we're combining has been done successfully before, yes.
Okay.
But not all together.
So you're combining. What are the systems that you're combining?
Electrokinetics, phytoremediation, soil remediation, and then toxic eating microfungi.
Wow. So you guys, you've actually found a fungi that will actually eat the toxins?
Yes, we have.
Wow. Okay. So now I don't jump put the cart before the horse. So we're growing the plants. You're maintaining them. Let's say you plant them in the summer. At the end of the summer, fall comes, they're full of whatever it is, it's a successful thing. You go in, you're going to pull those plants out and then replant other plants that will grow through the winter.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And then with the plants that you've pulled out, what happens to those?
They go in sealed tanks where those toxic eating microfungi go to work. And while they're working, this is what's really cool about these things. While they're working, when they attack a toxin, they create electricity. That electricity can be funneled into batteries, into the grid, to power the home, you know.
Mm.
So that's what's really cool.
So there might actually be some energy, some electricity generated with the phytoremediation process.
Correct.
And will it be able to be stored up? Will it be running into a battery? So that, because this is obviously an extremely long-term program, right?
No, this is. Once they go to work, they start. Once they start attacking, that's their food source. It makes the microbes happy. They make a little bolt of energy. You know,
okay.
you got a million of them things working, so you got a little million bolts of energy. It all add up to be bigger bolts.
So the idea is that with this phytoremediation, and you're going to put up greenhouses, grow these plants that absorb radiation and other toxins, not just radiation. It's the other
Correct.
Toxins also. And then you take the plants that have absorbed the toxins, put them into another, like, cistern or some other container.
Correct.
And then there's a process you're going to add something to that process, and it's going to break down, and while it's composting, essentially, because that's what happens, plants compost, right? It'll compost, but it'll generate electricity. It'll pull off the electricity and store it into a battery.
Or we can put it back into the grid, or the person can use it.
Wow.
Or it can be used on site. You know, there's the option of creating daylight hours and to making a semi-tropic area.
Wow. That's really exciting. That's a very, are you the first company that's actually thought of this? Are there other competitors out there doing kind of similar but different? Or, I haven't heard of anybody else doing this.
I don't, probably I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, so this is kind of exciting. And so then once it's so as long as this landfill has not been remediated or even actually the whole plain site, this could actually take off, and because we're not just talking about radiation, are we? This remediates any other kind of toxin, so this could be something that could be shared throughout the country at any other toxic site.
That is our end goal.
Wow.
Lead, you know, Flint had the lead crisis, and what's the system we're developing works in both water and soil.
Wow.
So this is a natural, organic way to remove toxins, heavy metals from the soil and water. And the far-reaching applications of this are the reason why I have a hard time sleeping at night.
Wow.
Because this could really do help people out there.
Wow. This really could help people out there. So once we go through a cycle, when people, you're going to do your, how long are you going to conduct your study? I'm sorry, for how long do you conduct your study?
We're planning for a 3-year study.
Okay. So after, let's say the first year, you've got the plants growing and you've recycled them, you're just going to keep growing plants. Now, are you going to be tracking the levels of radiation in the plants as you pull them out? Is that part of the study?
Yes.
Like determining what kind of chemicals do you have to, like, send it to a lab
when
you get it determined?
There's scientific data is a little lacking, I felt, in my research, where if you start with, say, X amount of your land is poisoned with X amount, how much are we going to get out? I felt that in lots of the studies I read that the data was lacking on the amount of actual toxins removed.
Well, what do you mean, the amount of toxins? They would say that they removed toxins, but they wouldn't determine how many toxins they removed?
Or how much, because this is all scientific stuff, and so they were only focused on one area. Without one of the things we did, the reason I've combined 4 or 5 things that work together is because when I researched just one of them, they said it left toxins, okay? This other one left toxins. This other one left toxins. And then it talks about why they leave toxins. Okay, well I figured it out. I to stop this, we do this. To stop this, we do this. And so I just designed my system around correcting all the other faults in the studies that I read. Did that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the studies, I mean, that's kind of the downside to how scientific studies are conducted in modern sciences. They disallow everything else, and they don't take into consideration the influence some things may have on a net result because they're too focused on the one. It's how they study.
No.
You know,
that's how they're supposed to work. If we set out, it's fine to study them other to learn about them other things, but if we set out to just learn about one thing, that's all we're studying.
Okay. And you make side notes about the other effects.
Right, right.
And follow up.
Right. It's the science sharing of the scientific information.
Okay.
And my stuff will not be behind a damn paywall.
Okay.
When we're all done.
Okay, good. Well, we hope that's true. We hope that you can control it like that. We hope that's true. So let's take this through this. So at the end of year 2, what do you...
Okay. I want to back up to year 1.
Okay.
Halfway through that before we completely harvest everything at the end of the year, some plants will allow you to cut them back. That like remove some of that toxic vegetation. So halfway, and that will encourage the next half of the plant to cycle harder.
Okay. It's
the same way when you cut back your houseplants, they come back fuller.
Okay.
And so we're going to be doing that as well. So halfway through that growing season, we can cycle some foliage off those plants. So at the 6 month, or halfway through a growing season, we can be cycling toxins.
Wow. So you can actually, within the first year, start.
Yeah, within the first year, I'll have halfway results, I'll have quarterly results on microbes move, or what's going on out in the yard, and then what's going on in the greenhouse, what's going on in the plants, and then halfway through the season, I'll have a half harvest information, and then I'll have a full harvest information at the end of the year. But that's for each growing cycle.
So it sounds to me, Scotty, that part of what will happen is this is going to expose if the environment is in a continual state of being polluted. Because in theory, correct me if I'm wrong, you put the greenhouse up and say a house with in between three houses or four houses, and you're growing these in an area where it supposedly has already been remediated. The radiation's been taken away. We know there's residual in the ground, so this is the ideal where we come in and we get the soil remediated. But if after, say, 2 or 3 years, the soil still shows high levels of toxins, it means that it is that the toxins are still continuing to pour in. I mean, part of the reason that generates this question is a lot of people in St. Louis had no idea they were being poisoned. And a lot of people around our country don't realize how much these people are, the polluters are just without regard, and with the sanctions of our local governments, they're turning a blind eye, and we're being polluted in levels that we are not even aware of. So in theory, once you set up a greenhouse, the area should be clean of toxins, correct, after a few short years?
As long as it does not get continually to get polluted by the landfill, yes, or a source. I've designed a fail-safe, or what they call it, a fail-safe in there, to where I'll know what new toxins get introduced. There'll be a barrier in between what's going on in the study and what's coming in, like, say, through the air, through the rain, or whatever.
So you'll be able to see if there's new toxins coming in, like after you've put this up, say in a year and a half, if there's a new element or a new type of toxin. What if they continue to pollute it with the same toxins, like let's say cesium-137, which is a radiation, radioactive thing. Can you tell if that cesium-137 is new or old? Was there any way that you could actually tell what the levels were before or after? Do you get what I'm saying? Or is there any way to know if it's been newly exposed?
This is a little above my forte. From my research, when the nuclear radiation decays over time, there are ways. They know that they all basically go back to lead. And then there's a couple stages before they get there. So that makes me think that yes, they could figure out that.
Wow, that would be that would be a very interesting thing. Okay, so then let's continue with this process, because I'd like to take us through the 3-year study and what happens. So a year and a half in, you're going to cut back, and then we go into year two, you make your logs, and year three, you're doing a three-year study because the EPA recommends it, correct?
Correct.
So at the end of your three-year study, then what's going to happen? Then what's the process then for your to get this out into the public?
There are the options we are looking at right now is open sourcing the material, offering the service for people, and there's one other one and then philanthropy activities where,
okay,
you know, somebody can't afford it, we will come in and do it.
Okay,
well,
so the idea is to basically turn this into something that can benefit the community through some type of a charitable organization, and then also allow it to be an offshoot, be a private industry. Because in terms of private industry, this has huge implications. If you could actually go through and remediate portions of the land, that would require, though, that we're going to see greenhouses up all over the country, right? Like big, huge.
That's not a bad thing, I don't consider.
I don't think so either.
If we can at the end of the study, or at the end of a study, if I could be assured that the greenhouse did not have health risks that would endanger future people using the greenhouse, I have no problem with turning over the greenhouse.
So that was the second part of my question. Like, okay, so let's say we get this remediated. When you go into the greenhouse, is it going to be like a radiated zone because it's attracting all this radiation, right? And toxins?
Yeah, that's a fear of mine. Yes, that is.
So,
I think, I don't know, maybe these plants will lock them toxins up. You know, but I fear, because the electrohorticulture is really going to boost things as well as the plant growth, that it's going to be toxic. To be determined.
So that's part of what you're finding out inside the three-year study is, do these plants actually emit radiation? Is it dangerous to be near them? So I imagine you guys are going to go in with protective
suits.
Gear inside the greenhouse.
Yes, suits, protective gear and suits. And I'm erring on the side of caution. I think all the crews will have at least two people in case something happens. That's another part that keeps me up at night.
These are very big issues. And so then we have this these areas. I mean, that might be a point of contention with families, because right now the radiation's in the ground. They don't have to think about it, and all they have to do is complain that the government's not helping them. But it might be some, you know, it's hard for people to admit that they have toxic soil in their backyard where their kids are playing.
Or no. About toxic soil, because
right.
I'm looking at soil reports from 2 miles away from the landfill, and the FUSRAP stated on the report, wind-blown contamination. Well, the only way it got there, you know, if you're two miles away from the landfill, the only way it got there was by the wind.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole, but not even just it is through the wind, but the air, the airborne radiation. So is there any way in this process, like, this is what makes me think it's going to be long-term, Scotty, is that it's going to be a long-term process. Like, this is going to be something that St. Louis is going to need for a good long while because of the airborne, and mostly because they haven't really fixed the issue of that smoldering event that they call it. You know what I mean? It's still going on.
So this
is going to be a long-term project, but it might end up providing the people of St. Louis a way to be able to live there. I mean, if they could decontaminate their yards, they can't decontaminate the air, but they could maybe decontaminate the dirt, right? That's what you're talking about?
Correct.
It only decontaminates the dirt. It does not decontaminate the air. There's no way to. Do you think that electromagnetic thing will attract the radiation in the air?
Not to my. The way to remove radiation from the air would be a filter system.
Hmm. Okay.
Like before it came into your house.
Right. Like put a filter system on top of the hole on the Westlake landfill site. Like put a filter there before, instead of just letting it blow up into the sky and the air unfiltered.
A giant greenhouse, or as the hemp there says, a giant sarcophagus or something like that. I can't. That's a big word that I'm not familiar with.
It ought to have something over it. I'm like so dumbfounded that they just like, right. It's billowing in the air.
What's interesting that Hemp Nair figured out was that you can 3D print this sarcophagus or whatever that word is, the structure over
the sarcophagus,
over the contaminated area. And I really like that. Especially before they go opening up the ground and exposing them, all of them 50,000 tons of radioactive waste to the outside air.
I have not heard that they plan on opening up the ground. Have you?
Well, if they remove it completely, they have to open up the ground.
Uh-huh. That's why the EPA does not want to remove it. Because they don't want to open up the ground because they have all those other toxins in there, which
they don't
just
know what's in there.
Yeah.
Because this stuff goes back to the very first Manhattan Project stuff, and they don't. I'm sure that I don't know. I don't think they know. They are not opening it up out of fear of what could happen.
Wow. So, Scott, are there any other major corporations out there doing what you guys do or having any pilot projects? Are you in competition with any of the major mega corporations on this pilot project of yours?
I read that there are some major players that have patents similar, but not what we're proposing.
Hmm. Okay.
So I don't feel there will be any trouble in patenting this. If we do have trouble with patenting it, we're going to open source it. We're not gonna hide our stuff behind money.
Right.
We are the core. David and I's main goal from this has never been to do this as a scheme to get rich. This is strictly to help people.
Yeah, that is really the issue, is that this, and we need people to help people. I mean, this is an idea that, so at the end of 3 years, then what happens at the end of, so we're you're talking by 2020, right, being able to submit your study?
Yeah, I guess I am.
That sounds so far away, I know. That is where we're at, 2020.
Wow.
I know. Sorry to shock you there Scotty.
You know, I have high hopes. I read all these other studies and I realize they didn't. I'm gonna kind of go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say our system, I think, will work faster than theirs because we're doing things different.
Well, I certainly hope you're protecting it with patents and keeping a lid on all of it, because they will steal it from you if they can.
And part of me says that, man, maybe I should just tell everybody about this right now because of the good that can come out of this. I'm going in, nevertheless, and that's why the service industry is part, because not everybody is going to be able to DIY this, or wants to DIY this,
DIY means do it your own, correct?
Right.
Okay.
You know, it's there's some variables here, because I don't want to tell somebody they could DIY this, and then and then they don't follow the safety procedures needed to deal around radioactive stuff. And so then they get sick in the end. That's not helping anybody.
Yeah. And I wonder if your study's going to show that it absorbs other types of chemicals that might prove to have been harmful. I mean, this is a very interesting study that you're planning on conducting here for the next 3 years, because seriously, once you get this up and started, now do you have the homes identified? Do you have the area where you're going to be putting up the greenhouse yet? Are you still looking?
I have two, three people interested. What I've never wanted to do was to, for my Westlake neighbors, to say, hey, I'm going to do this and not be able to follow through with it. Just because of what's going on, there has been people that have shown interest, but I tell them all, we have to wait for pilot study funding. I don't want to get anybody's hopes up.
Mm-hmm.
If so I don't actively search for clients or places to do this with.
Yeah.
Once I get pilot study funding or feel that I'm a for sure in, I will actively start looking for people I can help.
Okay.
Or we can help.
I get it. Because the pilot, now that's what you're talking about, applying for this grant. That's what you're saying. That's what this pilot study
Correct.
Is for. Okay, so that's the process. Get the grant, conduct the pilot study, and then conduct it for 3 years and see if it works, and then you can expand it to maybe help the other communities.
Correct.
Wow, this is certainly an optimistic point of view here, waiting 3 years, you know.
Well, like I said, within a year, I'm going to have tangible results.
Yeah.
If I lived up there right now, I would have a system going in my backyard right now, regardless of rules, regulations, whatever. I would be doing this.
How far away do you live from the Westlake landfill yourself?
It's a drive. If I have to stop and get some groceries for the car, or gas up the car or whatever, it can take me better part of an hour to get there.
So you're probably 20, 30 miles away from there.
Yeah, more like 40 or 50.
I'd be curious. Now, have you put up any type of a remediation site on your own property to see if there's any kind of toxins in the ground there that you may not have been told about?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. Boy, I sure would be curious. I know from my own experience, that's what... Because I'm actually beginning to be more and more shocked at how polluted our entire land is, our water and our land. It has just been seriously a free-for-all. They passed the Clean Water Act, and yeah, we've stopped the rivers from catching on fire, but pretty much the EPA has allowed practically everything else. It's just been stunning the more I look into it.
Sometimes they do things really good, and sometimes I think that they missed the mark completely.
Yeah, completely. And it really, I guess it has to, it depends on what, on, who's paying them to ignore it, I guess. I don't know. This is the hard part, you know?
Right. I don't know. I can't understand it. I know that whenever I'm looking into and digging into why they make their rules and stuff like that about Superfunds specifically, is that there are four or five big organizations involved that all seem like their fingers are in the pie, in the nuclear pie.
Hmm. Because their fingers are involved in the nuclear pie.
And with billions of dollars available are geared towards the nuclear program and reading the government's future avenues of exploration, it looks scary. They are. Yep. Our government is planning big nuclear stuff.
Well, that makes me want to ask you another question, but let me ask you my previous question. In terms of doing this for long term, so after 3 years, your plan is then what, to get a permit from the EPA to do this in lots of different, to be a contractor with the EPA? Is that what you would be doing? Or would you get...
One of the goals is to make the EPA, or not make them, to make the cleanup communities aware that there is a natural organic system that will do what they're doing cheaply.
Uh-huh. That's the only thing that makes me think that it might be sabotage, because these mega corporations, if they think that somebody else could be doing it in their own backyard for pretty cheap, they're going to do everything they can to squash it. They want us to pay no matter what.
I can't change the way big corporations think. I can lead by example with what we are doing.
It's true. Thank you, Scotty. I actually appreciate that. I mean, so you're saying that the government is planning...
The corporation, let's talk about fun stuff. Okay, the corporation I am planning on building is going to be like the old school corporations that I heard from, I don't know, long ago. I haven't heard of any for a long time. But this is going to be an actual employee-owned business where it operates like our democracy should, to where the smallest guy in the company has a say in how things are operated. Because just like me, I'm a little guy, and I come up with all this big plans. As there are other little guys like me out there that can make a difference in the world, and we got to give them a voice. But anyway, my hopes is to create an employee-owned company that people want to come work at. You know, they're going to make some decent money, but we're going to be helping people.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a big help, and if nothing else, it'll help people understand that there is a solution, because this would be the exciting thing, is if this phytoremediation can actually, while it's composting, really provide electricity to us, finally, from nuclear radiation, you know what I mean? Like, and all the other toxins, because it's not just the radiation it's going to be pulling out, it'll be pulling out all the other toxins and turning it into electricity. That is the exciting, because then you're not stuck with all these contaminated plants. Like right now in Fukushima, they're boxing up all this dirt over there. They have they have mounds and mounds. Millions of bags
now.
That's just emitting radiation.
Right. We can take our system, take that dirt, dump it into a bigger pile, throw in our plants, throw in our system, and we can make that dirt clean. Okay?
And not only
they have huge tanks of water sitting over there that we could remediate.
We
could kill the rats in that water.
Wow. Wouldn't that be awesome if they could actually... You know, are you telling me that the scientists from all these mega corporations have never thought of this? This is not something they've ever considered?
I don't know. I don't know why that nobody else does this. Maybe they didn't have as much time to research as I have. You know, I don't know why. I think a lot of them have thinking along the lines of Mr. Gates, who says that an old nuclear waste can be an energy source in the future.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
So I don't know. I don't know why. The cost to turn it, like to incinerate it or to do stuff like that, is so astronomical that prohibits people from doing things as well.
Wow. Well, I actually, it's there has
the
to
wrong,
be
right.
Go ahead.
I eliminate Another benefit of the system we developed is that we eliminate long-term storage. Okay, that those nuclear rads that were in the plants that have now made inert, the one scientific study says they can just be disposed of in the landfill, in a regular landfill. They don't require long-term tank storage in Nevada or wherever. So we are eliminating that transportation risk to the long-term storage. There's a lot of things going on here that are really promising, I feel.
It would be really awesome if we could move this entire process into a larger cultural change, because we have, imagine what we could do thinking about this, Scotty, if this 3-year study that you have really proves that we can actually turn the ship around. This is something that, you know, we could really get into really changing. I mean, just thinking about putting the phytoremediation in those tanks in Fukushima, I mean, that alone is exciting, because we could, in theory, save Japan, because really Japan is toast unless we figure out a way to remediate the radiation over there, period.
Lately, I've been dreaming about, they say it's leaking underground into the ocean.
Yes,
lately,
it is.
I've been thinking about how to fix that.
Good, because we need someone to figure out how to fix that, because that's why our oceans are dying. I mean, I saw a video this morning of an Alaskan bear with white tips on its ears and on its body, and it looks weak, and it's eating radiated salmon. I mean, Alaska, again, is among the most bombarded and hard hit with radiation in our entire country, and people are ignoring it.
Your citizen science video you did the other day and advertised to Facebook was so spot on. You showed that it's the area is void of life.
Was shocking.
That is citizen science reporting at the source.
Stunning.
I
went out to, for the listeners who didn't see it, we did it on an impromptu basis. We did a Facebook Live video, mostly because we were doing videos, and Kevin Finnegan, who was with me, we went out to the early tide. We wanted to go out to where the morning and the evening, the low tide is, so we could see the marine life and the life in basically to just see, you know, because that's where all the little tide pools are, where the new life grows. That's where they live. And we got out there at 8:30 in the morning. By about 9:15 when we started doing it live on Facebook, it was because our phones weren't working. We were in an area where the phones just were not working. And we said, well, let's see if we can go Facebook Live. It was, the last time I was out there was about 3.5 years ago. Fukushima had been going on for maybe about a year, year and a half. There were still tons of seals, tons of that area, that little cove where we were in. It used to, that whole big rock, it was a little area with a big rock jetting out of the ocean. That thing was covered with birds and seals the last time I was there. Now, granted, it was the middle of the day, but there should have been more birds, more seals. All we saw was one type of a green sea anemone, and then that was it. We saw two starfish among the rocks. That was it, two starfish. And we saw 3 or 4 sand crabs. That was all. We saw no real life. It was stunning. So,
I look at what you're describing there, I don't live next to the ocean, so I don't have those experiences. But I look at that as to be like going out in the woods here and not seeing squirrels, not seeing birds, not seeing, you know, the bugs that crawl around on the forest and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't understand why people are continuing on this nuclear path that they're going. It just makes it a little offensive.
I think it has to do with the normalcy bias. People don't see it. Like, one of the things that we were talking about yesterday driving back was the lack of birds. Like, there were some birds. Yeah, we saw little tiny flocks, but nothing massive. This is the summertime. We should see lots and lots of birds up here. But it's our normalcy bias. It still looks beautiful out there. The ocean is magnificent. It's trees, the streams. When I went camping up in the Cascadia Park over last weekend, there was very few birds. It was really kind of interesting. We should have heard a lot more birds. We'd hear two or three birds, but not massive sounds of tweet, tweet, tweet in the morning. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it's those small things that we don't hear because of our normalcy bias. That's what I think.
Those small things, here's kind of the way I look at it. If it negatively affects the environment, it negatively affects people. Okay, what you're describing is the perfect example of the canary in the coal mine. You know, where the coal miners use the little birds to let them know that hey, things weren't right. You know? So lack of birds is the canary in the coal mine warning.
Literally.
Not fine.
Literally, yeah.
And that's why, back to that citizen science, that's why I was reading, and that article was put out by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They were like, citizen science reporting is needed because the scientists are overwhelmed. They can't be everywhere and do everything. And that's why what you did was important to somebody that's studying the effects of Fukushima.
Yeah, but then we have guys like, Ken Buser from Woods Hole Oceanographic, testing the water instead of testing the fish and saying, gee, there's not very much radiation in the water. Well, there's not going to be much radiation in the water. The fish is what's really, fish magnetize the radiation by 1,000 times. That's why eating fish is dangerous. We know that. That's the natural, what fish do is they see the radiation, cesium-137, 134 is potassium. It's of that same family. So they, because there's so little potassium in the ocean, their bodies have naturally evolved to magnetize potassium by 1,000 times. So they do the same thing to radiation. So there's 1,000 times more radiation in a fish that's in the water. So we not just have – this is where I get really angry with the American – the federal government and really with the entire scientific community. They refuse to think outside of the box that they have been shoved into. They refuse to start thinking – you know, if it's – because it goes against their paycheck. They don't want to tell us the truth, and it is very overwhelming. I mean, we are in a point where we really need, like, this is why I'm really excited to have you on, and I hope that in a few weeks or in a month or a couple months you'll come back again and give us an update on your process, because what you're providing the people of St. Louis and, frankly, the world, if it really could take off, if they don't figure out a way to sabotage you, if you can really get this off of the ground, this is a way that we could remediate our soil and bring our earth back to earth. Because right now we are one toxic slew. I mean, it is a very sad state of affairs to find our country and our planet in, and we need to turn the ship around. Which is why it's exciting that you found a simple thing that comes from the earth, which will save the earth. Outside of anything that mankind could do.
I call it using nature to solve mankind's problems.
That is so awesome. So at the end of 3 years, you would start working with the EPA.
It's a 3-year study, but I say in 1 year, I'll have enough to go global.
Okay. So you just need to verify that it's working, that it's going to work,
right.
Get the system set up, and then you're conducting a 3-year study to work with the EPA, but you are willing to start helping families in St. Louis remediate their backyards prior to working with the federal government.
back to the safety, once we have things figured out to where we can teach people how to do it safely, or whatever. That's our goal, is to put this in the hands of the people as fast as we can.
Wow. Wow. Because you know how great that news would be?
The government is not going to save us. We have to save ourselves.
Wow. Well, that is an understatement. They are not going to save us. That is for sure. They are not going to save us. But the exciting part about this is we could expand this all around the country. Like I know out here on the Northwest, the Hanford Reservation, it used to be an Indian reservation, but basically since, it's the same thing, the Manhattan Project waste, it's the same stuff. They have just dumped on the Native American lands all this Manhattan Project waste that the whole Hanford story is its own issue. It's just such a horrible mess. But there are Native tribes up in the Northwest that could really use this because their lands really are unusable. And their children are suffering, and the people are suffering from the negative effects of radiation. So if this works, really, we could get the word out, and people could start working on it. Even a DIY, there's plenty of people who could start saving their own processes for many people. This is an exciting, very exciting process.
I think so, too. And that's one reason, like I said, I can't sleep at night, or it doesn't let me sleep at night. How do I accomplish this? How to get there? This is my third go around trying to get a grant. I've added I call it the core group of founders. We'll be people that have the skills and education that I am lacking. Mm-hmm. That I can present this system, idea, invention, whatever, this process to people with money that they would trust me essentially to do what I'm gonna say. And that's kinda, I've assembled a group of people that I feel we can do this and bring this to market and bring this to the world.
That's really exciting. Scotty, thank you. Do people have a contact address or any way? Do you have a website or something in case people want to get in touch with you?
I have a few websites out there. I have the Mohemp Energy website.
Mohempenergy.com?
It's .org. They all okay. should say any Mohemp Energy should direct you to the blog.
Okay.
Or I've tried in my SEO fumblings, and then that was where I was keeping some of the earlier information I've compiled. Since then, since I figured things out, we moved the entity to its own little domain name or whatever, and it's called Electrohemp. Electrohemp, God bless it, I should know that.
That's all right, don't worry.
Electrohemp.org.
Electrohemp.org. Okay,
right.
Well, look, we have about 30 seconds left. I really appreciate your time here and going through this with us. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you've actually come up with a system that gives us hope and gives us an idea that maybe we can really turn this ship around on a large scale, because we definitely need it. I really appreciate you being here, Scotty. Thank you so much, and thank you for your efforts, for everything you're doing for our planet.
It's my pleasure. I live here too, and I realize a healthy environment is needed.
And that's, amen to that. You know. Well, put your courage feet on, everybody. Take some action. Do what you can do. And thanks, Scotty. We'll talk to you guys soon.
My name is S.M. Gibson.